Coming up on today's episode of the Locked On Bucks podcast, we have Peter Bukowski as we cross over with the Locked On Green Bay Packers podcast. But first, the Tom Brady effect continues to impact the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as they take over Wednesday's lead block on Good Morning Football.
You are Locked On Buccaneers, your daily Tampa Bay Buccaneers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, Bucks Nation, and welcome to today's episode of the Locked On Bucks Podcast. Today's episode of the Locked On Bucks Podcast is brought to you by Built Bar. Head over to BuiltBar.com for $10 off of your first box of the best protein bars you will ever taste. I am your host, David Harrison, one half of the normal hosting crew here on the Locked On Bucks Podcast, normally joined by James Yarko, who's having his day off this week. Both of us are writers covering the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for SB Nation over at BucksNation.com. Find everything we are writing there and on Twitter at Bucks_Nation. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter at DH82_Bucks. Find James at JYarko_Bucks, and then find this show at Locked On Bucks. Coming up in just a little bit, guys, we've got Peter Bukowski, the host of the Locked On Green Bay Packers podcast, joining us to continue our crossover series this week as we take a look at the North Division champs from 2019, the 13-3 Green Bay Packers led by Aaron Rodgers. But before we do that, we need to talk about your lead Tampa Bay Buccaneers story for the day, and that is the continuation of the Tom Brady effect as he continues to impact the reputation and coverage of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers franchise on Wednesday morning, leading the franchise to take over the lead block of NFL Network's popular show, Good Morning Football.
It also changes everybody else on the roster, not just Godwin, not just Evans, but now Lavonte David becomes a household name. Now Devin White gets his moment in the sun. Now Byron Leftwich, an offensive coordinator, has all eyes on him, where he suddenly becomes a head coaching candidate if the Buccaneers do well. It just rises everybody up, and it puts them in a different conversation. The Buccaneers played one primetime game last season, one. And it was on week two against the Carolina Panthers. And you guys don't remember it because it was early in the season. There was a rain delay. It was a forgettable game against Cam and Jameis. Now they're on five different times in primetime. They're the biggest premier game on Sunday afternoon, week one. When they start things off in New Orleans, they are a household nationwide team right now. For better or for worse, we will know Chris Godwin. We will know Mike Evans. We might know 20 guys on that team because we are going to be force-fed the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That's what Tom Brady does. He's going to be in your television set every single week. And you bet it's not just on the games. We're starting our show 7 a.m. in the middle of May talking Tom Brady, and it's going to be like that all season long.
All right, and that voice you heard there, guys, was Peter Schrager, of course, of Good Morning Football, as he and the rest of the Good Morning Football crew sat around the virtual breakfast table, as it were, practicing social distancing in these times of necessity, talking about what Tom Brady brings to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And of course, we already know he brings the mentality and the experience of a six-time Super Bowl champion, but he also brings all of the exposure that having a six-time Super Bowl champion brings to your franchise. And you heard Peter there talking about the impact it's going to have on guys like Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, specifically Lavonte David, who Buccaneers fans and more people are starting to realize is criminally underrated and under-celebrated in this league and among the national media. But with five primetime games, like we've already seen in the schedule release, this Tampa Bay Buccaneers unit is going to have every opportunity in the world to not only take advantage of having Tom Brady on their roster, but showing the rest of the world what they bring to the table outside of Tom Brady, what they bring to Tom Brady, which is one of the things that led him to this franchise in the first place. Remember, if you go back to the conversations during the early part of the offseason leading up to the legal tampering and to the ultimate signing of Brady to the Buccaneers, Jason Light talked about how when they called his agent, they said it was a great idea for them to call because Tom Brady wanted to join this team. And that conversation turned very quickly from a recruiting pitch from the franchise to the player, more of a recruiting pitch from the player to the franchise. Tom explaining to the Buccaneers why he felt like he could fit in a system, in a roster that already looked primed to make the NFL playoffs if it weren't for some unfortunate and untimely turnovers, missed kicks, poor defense early on in the season that ultimately led to the team finishing 7-9, giving Bruce Arians his first 9-loss season as an NFL head coach and kind of kicking off this quarterback search in the 2020 offseason. And I'll tell you guys, Buccaneers fans are not used to their favorite team being the centerpiece or being the focal point of so many media productions and conversations, but it's not going to end. And for the next 2 years, you can pretty much expect it to continue on as Tom Brady looks to put a ribbon on his career and really make this last chapter of his storied NFL career one of the best parts of the entire story. And James and I, of course, are enjoying the ride just as much as everybody else, but also looking forward to seeing guys like Levante David get some of the spotlight shown on him, and seeing guys like Devin White take advantage of that charismatic personality and that infectious personality playing out on the field, all the plays that he was able to make and getting him some of that recognition as well. The love is real surrounding the Tampa Bay Buccaneers right now, guys, so enjoy it completely as we continue to hope for an on-time 2020 NFL season. All right, guys, on the other side of this segment, into segment two, we will welcome Peter Bukowski, host of the Locked On Green Bay Packers podcast. But before we move on to that segment, you know I got to talk to you about Built Bars, guys. I finished my workout this morning, actually not too long before I started recording today's episode, and I finished off my workout with the Black Cherry Chocolate Cream Built Bar, the first time I've tried that flavor, which came in my 18-bar mixed pack that I bought shortly after getting my initial pack from the company before we started this campaign. And guys, I gotta say, it did not defeat the mint chocolate delight. It did not defeat banana nut bread, but it was delicious. And I'm really not even a fan of cherry flavor things usually, but it was pretty stinking good. And let me give you some information here. The Black Cherry Chocolate Cream Built Bar provides you 110 calories, just 4 grams of sugar, and just 5 grams of net carbs. So whether you're looking to get a boost and help fuel your muscles after a tough workout, or you're looking into the weight management side of things and looking for a snack, a treat that's going to taste delicious but it's not going to derail you from your goals, Built Bar is the product for you. Right now, for our listeners, all you have to do is go to builtbar.com, select the product you want to buy. Again, if you're a first-time consumer, I recommend the 18-bar mixed pack. It gives you a little bit of a lot of flavors. You can try them out, figure out which ones are your favorites before you come back and customize your own box. Get your 3 favorite flavors, 6 bars of each for a total of 18 bars as well. However you decide to do it, that's your business. But when you do it, make sure you enter the promo code LOCKEDON as you get ready to check out, and you will get $10 off of your first box of Built Bars. Guys, you guys have been amazing throughout this entire campaign. We've gotten feedback on social media. I've had friends, I've had family try them out, and they tell me they love them. In fact, you guys have done so well that the company and the network have already talked about a potential follow-up offer for return business in the future. So please, guys, if you haven't already, take advantage, because not only are you getting a product at a reduced cost by taking advantage of this offer, but you're also helping the network, you're helping this show, and you're potentially creating another offer for yourself down the road to take advantage of. Again, guys, I can't emphasize it enough. That is builtbar.com. Use the promo code Locked On. Get $10 off your first box.
David, thanks for being with me on Locked On Packers.
Oh, of course, Peter. Thank you for having me on. Looking forward to seeing these two teams face off against each other once again.
Yeah, the thing is I'm struggling because, you know, we're sitting here in May talking about these teams, and I'm going back looking at the transactions for the Buccaneers, and I can't find really anything of note to talk about.
Yeah, that's fortunately in these times, it hasn't been a big problem for us this offseason.
Tom Brady becoming a Buccaneer happened like 3 years ago, didn't it? I mean, it seems like forever ago. Plus, it seemed like even before it happened that there was the rumor that it was going to happen or that it could happen. And I have to be honest with you, David, it was the landing spot that seemed least likely to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think once the 2019 season wrapped up, I think most people, you know, in January and probably into February would have expected the Buccaneers to bring back Jameis Winston. But then as you kind of really went through everything that had happened in the 5 years that Jameis was with the team and everything that Bruce Arians kind of stood for and was talking about, you kind of started getting those little hand tips from the organization that probably wasn't going to be the case. So when the national media really caught on to Tom Brady leaving the Pats, because I'll admit, initially, I just never really envisioned a world where Tom Brady actually left New England. But you start looking at the landscape of the NFL, and outside of Tampa, Florida, not being Los Angeles, because I know a lot of people thought that he might just want to be in L.A. a la LeBron James. Really, the Buccaneers seemed like the best fit in my mind, as much as I could come across from an unbiased standpoint, looking, you know, being so close to the Bucs. But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, all the chips fell into place, and Tom wanted to be in Tampa just as much as Tampa wanted him. And here we go. And hopefully we'll be in for a fun ride in 2020.
Here's why I was dubious. Number one, it's not the best offensive line situation that I think he could have gone to. And that certainly plays a role. Bruce Arians likes to play a kind of football that Tom Brady hasn't played really since 2007, when he had, you know, prime Randy Moss. He doesn't like to just sit and wait and make throws with guys in his face. He wants to get the ball out quickly. and Tampa doesn't really have that kind of receiver. So as we look at what this offense is going to look like, yeah, they bring in Rob Gronkowski. Of course, we're going to talk about Gronk. But how much does this offense bend to Tom Brady's will versus how much does he bend to the will of Arians and the skill set of these receivers? Mike Evans and Chris Godwin are guys who can get you chunk plays down the field.
Yeah, you know, during the offseason buildup, there was a lot of conversation about how much control Tom Brady really wanted with the team that he went to. And that's something that's been brought up to Jason Light and Bruce Arians both since, you know, Brady signed with the team, and just how much influence or control he's going to have. And Jason's kind of been on, you know, on record saying, you know, it's not like a situation where Tom Brady came in and said, hey, listen, if I'm going to join your team, you're going to draft this guy, you're going to sign that guy, anything like that. But it's just they all kind of just sat down, you know, as three football smart people and said, here's how we view the team. Here's how you fit. Here's how we fit. And here's where we want to go from there. And let's see if we're on the same page. And they are. I think the first round investment in Tristan Wirfs is kind of a sign towards that, of making sure that Tom Brady is as comfortable as his offensive line can possibly make him. And I really feel like this offensive line has the potential to take that next step forward and become kind of a top half of the league unit. Obviously, the amount of OTAs, the amount of training camp they can get in is going to play a big role in that, especially putting a rookie on that right side. But, you know, if everything works out well and if they can get together and get in the classroom and study and work together, that those five guys up front can do enough of a job where Tom Brady can put his mark on this offense. And I think that's kind of where the Rob Gronkowski signing comes in as well. Bruce does like to take shots. He does like to, you know, the seven-step drop, sit in the pocket for a few seconds, let stuff develop downfield. But I think at the end of the day, Bruce Arians is just, he's a smart guy. He's a football guy who wants to win football games. And something he pointed out too after the offseason is, last year in their offense, and really in his offense over the time he's been a coach, it's not like there's never a check down or never a hot read. In fact, early in the season, we actually saw a couple of miscommunications that led to interceptions that most of us didn't blame on Jameis, because there were miscommunications where Jameis called a hot read, he called a hot route, and the receiver ran the wrong route, broke at the wrong point, something like that, growing pains. So those elements are in a Bruce Arians system. And I think with Tom Brady coming in, he's going to look at the landscape of the weapons they have, guys like Scotty Miller and Tyler Johnson, who they got in the draft as well, and be able to make the smart decision based off of what the defense is showing him.
I think the other question that we have to ask here when we look at, okay, how much does Tom Brady improve this team over Jameis Winston, was last year Tom Brady didn't play great, and not just didn't play great by Tom Brady standards, didn't play great. I mean, probably played some pretty average football. So when you're looking at it for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, is, you know, much better weapons than he had last year. And, you know, you're talking about a rejuvenated Tom Brady, all of those sort of intangible things. How much do you think situation and circumstance can elevate him based on what we saw the last few years from Brady? Because this was really not a 1 year drop in play. We're talking about at least 2 years in a clear drop off in his level of play.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of that has to do with how much the Patriots put on Tom's shoulders and the weapons they did or didn't put around him. You know, I kind of, you know, early in the offseason, when all the Gronk stuff really kind of started coming up, you know, people, it was mostly just speculation. People saying, oh, well, now that Tom is moving, would Gronk be interested in coming back? And there really weren't any teeth to those types of conversations yet. You know, I had a conversation with my co-host James Jarko on our show about how if the situation in New England was one where the franchise, you know, through whatever means, was basically saying, hey, look, Tom, you're the GOAT. Hey, look, Rob, you're one of the greatest tight ends to ever play. Hey, Julian, you're one of the best slot receivers in the game today. You three need to make this thing happen with the pieces we give you. Don't expect us to bring you in another Randy Moss or what have you. If that really is kind of the situation that was going on there, then it would make sense for Rob to kind of look at his career and say, listen, I'm getting really banged up. You're putting a whole lot of weight on just the three of us. I love you guys, but I can't keep putting myself through this. I'm going to step away and I'm going to back out. And then you look at Tom, and again, going back and look at what he was seeking out in the offseason. He wasn't looking for a team that was mediocre, you know, poor. And he's like, I'm going to come take your Brandon LaFell and make him a Super Bowl champion. No, what he was looking for was a team that was playoff caliber on paper, but just needed that driver to get behind the wheel and really know how to steer that machine. And I think that's what he's found in Tampa. So the situation is a lot better. And then Rob coming back so quickly after Tom signed with Tampa kind of reinforces my belief that some of that departure, you know, is more related to how much that franchise was really wanting those key characters to carry on their shoulders and less about physical ability. You know, Tom's getting older. As every player gets older, they need those role players to step up more. They kind of need to not be the main guy to hold up the pillars, so to speak. And I think that's where Tom is now, but he's in a position where he can lean on other people to help him make plays, but he can also make enough to where people are going to give him credit either way.
So you touched on the Gronk stuff. So I actually want to flip to the defensive side of the ball, because this is a place where I don't think the Buccaneers have gotten enough credit. Obviously, mm-hmm. we know Shaq Barrett last year, the kind of season that he had. Devin White got off to a little bit of a slow start, but by the end of the year, I think was playing at a much higher level. And then, you know, a guy like Vita Vea, he really came on and started doing some impressive things. Levante David has always, I think, been an underrated guy.
Oh, yeah.
When you look at this defense, was last year, you know, just the tip of the iceberg, or was last year a circumstance where they were really playing above their heads? What is your take on that?
I think early on you saw a very young unit that had a lot of new players and new parts of it coming together and just trying to learn a new system and learn how to independently do their job, relying on the other guys to do their job. I think that's really the kind of the hardest part of playing defense. You know, as a human being, you see kind of a problem happening and you kind of have a natural instinct, especially when you're one of those alpha type personalities, to take action to help it. Well, if your responsibility is a deep zone in the middle part of the field, and you see the guy who's supposed to have that under coverage slip off or slip on the ground or just make a bad read or whatever, your natural instinct is to be like, oh no, that hole is being opened. I want to go and cover that. Next thing you know, Brandon Cooks is running on top of you for a 70-yard touchdown because your zone is now vacated. So trust in that unit and trust in how they play is a big part of it. And in a Todd Bowles defense, he's so aggressive that if one guy is out of position, or one guy's out of position, so this guy leaves his position to fill that position, that's a huge hole in the defense and a big gap that an offense can take advantage of. And when you're playing against guys like, you know, Kyle Shanahan and Jimmy Garoppolo with their offensive schemes and how intelligent Kyle is as a coach, and Drew Brees in your division, even a guy like Teddy Bridgewater, whose football IQ is through the roof, you can't have those mistakes. As the season went on, really the turning point was Seattle when Russell Wilson just destroyed this defense, specifically Jamel Dean. That was kind of the turning point where I think Coach Bowles was able to look at those young guys and they were able to look inwards and say, look, we've got to trust each other, because when we're just kind of playing on our heels and we're just kind of reacting to what we see and getting outside the scheme, this is what's going to happen when we face guys like DJ Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and Russell Wilson. We can't continue doing that. And that's when you really kind of saw that shift. And I think they grew into what I would consider probably a top 20, maybe top 18 defense by the end of the year. Now, again, if they can come back and put in some more work and build off of that, then I think they can get in the top half of the league. There are some people around this team, close to this team, who believe this defense can grow into a top 10 defense in the National Football League this year. I think they have that potential, but I think that's probably, if I'm being honest, that's probably the ceiling this year. Is if they reach maximum potential in 2020, you're probably looking at a top 10 unit. Most likely, you're probably looking at top 15.
Football Outsiders defense adjusted value over average, DVOA, had them as the fifth best defense in football last year. Just something that I don't think the average fan was paying much attention to was that defense last year. I really like this unit. You mentioned the corners, and that's how I want to sort of wrap up this discussion. If there's one spot on this defense where I feel like, okay, you can attack them a little bit, I look at what Atlanta can put on the field with their receivers. I look at Carolina and their division, and New Orleans obviously can create all kinds of matchup problems. And then they're going to face teams like Seattle. If they're going to be NFC playoff contenders, they're going to face the Cowboys and the Packers with these offenses and quarterbacks who can hurt you. So do they have enough in the secondary, particularly at cornerback, to match up with these teams?
Yeah, I think they do. I was on the ship, or you know, on the side of the conversation where I kind of wanted them to go and look for a veteran addition. A guy like Logan Ryan was kind of attractive to me. Or maybe if they didn't go free agency, maybe get one of these top cornerbacks in the draft, on day two that was going to be available. They didn't go that way. They did address the free safety position with Antoine Winfield Jr., which free safety in the secondary was my biggest concern. At cornerback, though, Carlton Davis, you know, early in the season, coming into the regular season, my concern with him was going to be pass interference. He's a very physical guy, and I was just kind of wondering how much that was going to show and how many flags he might get as being targeted from these offenses. And honestly, early in the season, I would say the first eight games, the penalties were really becoming a problem. But he was able to settle down, kind of able to get that under control. And towards the back half of the season, we really saw a lot of improvement there. Jamel Dean, again, kind of came into his own. Sean Murphy Bunting had a really rough training camp, early part of the season. Again, another guy who grew. So I think these guys, I think the one big thing they have is, again, trusting each other, trusting what they've been taught, because now they're seeing that what they're being taught is going to work for them on the field. And the fact that Todd Bowles didn't get stolen away as a head coach somewhere and is coming back for another year is going to be huge for the growth of this unit. But really, at the end of the day, I think a lot of the success of that young cornerback group was predicated on the return of Jason Pierre-Paul and the pass rush that those guys were able to get with Shaq Barrett, Lavonte David, Devin White, like you talked about, Vita Vey and Dominican Sue kind of controlling that line of scrimmage. The fact that they got their front seven back completely intact, they're all going to be healthy. JPP, you know, knock on wood, but he shouldn't have a neck injury, you know, entering the season where it caused him to miss the first chunk of the year. Devin White isn't going to have, you know, tonsillitis issues and then hurt his knee on his first game back from that surgery. If that unit can get back onto the field again, that's going to be the big thing, is with everything going on, is when can they get back into the lab and start working? Then, yeah, I think they have enough. And if their quarterback can go out there and put points on the board while keeping possessions where it belongs, not giving possessions away to the other team, then, yeah, I think they've got more than enough to make a playoff push.
Todd Bowles, one of my favorite defensive coaches in the league. I think he is also incredibly underrated. He got a raw deal in New York, if you ask me. All right, we are going to flip the script coming up here in just a little bit. David going to put me on the hot seat, break down the Green Bay Packers in 2020, and we'll do that right after this.
Great stuff here today on the Locked On Bucks podcast as we continue our NFC North crossover series. I'm joined by Peter Bukowski of the Locked On Packers podcast. Peter, we've been talking Buccaneers. Now let's flip it over to the Packers side of the ball. I got to ask you the first question that's coming, and you know it has to come. Jordan Love being selected in the first round of the 2020 NFL draft, the impact on Aaron Rodgers. I saw that Brett Favre recently kind of went on record and talked about it a little bit and said he had spoken to Aaron, wasn't going to unveil everything that they talked about or any specifics, but that if Aaron was upset about it, he would understand it. I don't know. To me, reading between the lines, you can put what you want into there. But man, what was your reaction on night one when that pick came across the board? What do you think it's going to do with Aaron Rodgers, or if anything, with Aaron Rodgers? And just how do you feel about the situation overall?
I thought for sure the first question you were going to have to ask was about Christian Kirksey, but I guess we can do the Jordan Love thing. That's fine. I get it. No, it is funny that we're sitting here, you know, in 2005, Aaron Rodgers goes in the first round. And one of the reasons why the Packers felt comfortable taking Aaron Rodgers was because every offseason, Brett Favre made the offseason about Brett Favre. And now, 15 years later to the day, the Packers take Jordan Love to potentially enact the same sort of three-year waiting period and replace a Hall of Fame quarterback. And Brett Favre is making the offseason about Brett Favre. I don't know what to make of the feelings that Aaron Rodgers has based on anything Favre said. I think a lot of that interview that he did with Rich Eisen that you referenced was about papering over the way that he treated Rodgers in the first go round when they did it. It felt like everything he was saying was really about his experience. And in a way, Rodgers can't react negatively, not publicly anyway, because he had been so hurt by what Favre did, by what the fans did. If anyone doesn't want Packer fans to get on Jordan Love's case, it's Aaron Rodgers, because he went through this. And as Favre said in that interview, Aaron Rodgers, if Jordan Love comes to him and say, hey, can you watch some film with me? Can we talk? Aaron Rodgers is going to be okay with it. So I think this is much like last year with these stories about who has control of the offense. Is it Matt LaFleur? Is he going to give Aaron Rodgers the ability to audible at the line of scrimmage? Is he going to be able to make checks? In 4 months, we're not going to be having these discussions.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. You couldn't blame Aaron Rodgers for having some feelings or some emotions about it if he does. But again, like you said, he can't be public about him. He just can't. That's just the fact about it. And honestly, I almost kind of wonder, I mean, I'm not in the building, obviously, but I almost look at it. What if this isn't necessarily Jordan Love is eventually the replacement for Aaron Rodgers? What if they're trying to take a page out of the Patriots handbook? They draft a quarterback in Jordan Love. Maybe next year they grab another one in the third, fourth round. Who knows? And if that guy starts to develop, they can flip Jordan Love for some draft capital later on down the field or down the years and plug some gaps. We'll see how it all works out, of course. But looking at the rest of the draft, I mean, I can't really look at a single player in a vacuum and say, well, that guy is just a bad pick. But of course, the conversation is, you know, not getting weapons for Aaron Rodgers and not getting any more wide receivers. I look at your guys' draft class in Green Bay, and What I don't see a single starter in this draft class. And typically, especially fans, they want to see starters getting drafted. They want to see that fresh young face on the field starting week one that they can put a name to, or put a name to that face from draft night and say, that's why we invested a pick. But the Green Bay Packers went 13-3, and it's kind of funny because when people react to the quote-unquote not getting weapons for Aaron, it's almost like the sky is falling, the roof is collapsing, Lambeau Field is just going to crumble to the ground. But the Green Bay Packers just went 13-3 last season. So to not have a starter in your draft class isn't necessarily a huge surprise when you have a team, again, that went 13-3. Which pick is your favorite pick from the group right now?
Well, I think I can answer that this way. I went into the draft going, who is the guy that they could draft who would step in as a starter? I mean, right, regardless of where it was, because they filled their gaps. Now, you could say, okay, they play this sort of nickel hybrid where they have a safety who plays a sort of de facto linebacker, and they don't have a great option there, but they have their preferred starter back from last year, Raven Green, coming off injury. And the only other one is like, you could upgrade the defensive line spot. You could upgrade the nickel corner spot if they're not going to bring back Tremont Williams. But other than that, they have 22 positions accounted for. So this idea that they're not going to, you know, knock in a first round pick at one of these spots, I think is a little bit silly. When you ask about my favorite pick, I think the best values they got were on day three. I really liked the John Runyon Jr. pick. I know that third, you know, day three offensive lineman, probably not the sexiest conversation for podcasts, but I really like what he can be, what he can do. I think it's a potential J.C. Tretter situation where you're talking about a day three offensive tackle who converts inside and potentially could be a long-term center. This is the last year on Corey Linsley's deal. Does he get the opportunity to compete for that starting job a year down the line? And I have to say, you know, although I was pretty adamant on the podcast that I didn't think Jordan Love was a sure enough bet to be a can't miss guy, right? That my position was, if you are going to take a quarterback, he has to be the guy that you can't possibly pass on. I didn't think that was Jordan Love. But the more that I've looked at it and the more that I've studied him, and if it is going to be the case that 2 to 3 years from now is the timeline, the talent there is pretty tantalizing. And the opportunity cost, given the way that it ultimately played out, all of those receivers went and in the first round, and then they went again in more in the second round even. I mean, it was crazy to see the receivers fly off the board. I don't really judge the Packers for not trading up to get one of them. So, you know, in a vacuum, I think the Love pick is a good one, even though it's not my favorite. I think you can justify the value that they got just because the quarterback position is so valuable. You know who's going to disagree with me? Aaron Rodgers, because he wanted someone that can help him in the next 3 years. I'm just talking from a long-term perspective. The talent there, and I guess maybe that's more what I love. I don't love the pick, but I love the talent that Jordan Love has.
Yeah, I mean, the truth of the matter, there's not usually going to be a lot of top 15 teams who are looking to trade completely out of the top 15, out of the top 20 range. Usually most of your drafts are kind of internal into those picks. I mean, even the Buccaneers themselves, you know, Jason Light tried to trade up with two or three different teams. Even, you know, there's a report that he was trying to go up as high as pick number 7 to try to grab one of these top 4 tackles. So when you've got more teams looking to move up and you have looking to move back, and this wide receiver class that is so highly touted, everybody, Minnesota, all these guys are going to want those wide receivers. So not hard to believe that, you know, they would be taken off the shelf before Green Bay got a crack at any of them. But looking at that wide receiver group, that's going to get a lot of attention, of course. And like you said, I think 4 months from now, the Jordan Love conversation is over. I think 4 months from now, the wide receiver conversation will flare back up, then eventually it'll die down. And if the Pack goes 13-3, we'll just wait till the 2021 NFL draft where everybody expects them to take a wide receiver again. But you look at the depth chart, right? You got Valdez Scantling, Equanimeous St. Brown, Devin Funchess, who I'm honestly not a fan of as far as being like a number two guy. Who do you see stepping into that kind of number two role, number three role? How do you see these guys kind of sorting out as we near training camp, hopefully?
The number two focal point of the passing game is Aaron Jones. And when you look at the way they used him last year, I think that's when you look at the A.J. Dillon pick and you say, okay, they want to take some of the burden off Aaron Jones as a runner, even though he's their best runner, because he's such a weapon in the passing game. One of the few running backs last year to have a receiver-like advanced metric profile in terms of when he touches the ball in the passing game, he affects the game like a receiver. Now, part of that is because they were able to use him down the field. He had that sluggo for what would have been a touchdown if he doesn't, you know, sort of mindlessly step out of bounds against the Chiefs. Similar play against Washington, where he didn't bend the route a little bit back toward the sideline, and Aaron Rodgers just missed him a little bit. He can be that receiver for them. But I really like the talent of Alan Lazard, what he showed last year. And I think if you replace the big slot snaps for Jimmy Graham and Geronimo Allison, who had to play a lot of snaps last year in the slot, not his best position, and he was really bad at it. I mean, he was one of the worst preferred starters in football last year. And that sucks to say because he's such a great story and such a great guy. He just was really bad last year. If you replace that with Devin Funchess, someone who can be a little bit of a matchup problem for all his inconsistencies, you're talking about someone who was a real contributor on multiple playoff teams and a Super Bowl team. I think he comes in and immediately upgrades the Packers receiving core, even if he is not a field tilter, which he isn't.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. I've had some conversations about Devin Funchess with my co-host, and he's tried to point out my flaws in my own analysis of him. I will admit a little bit to the fact that he went to Michigan as maybe being a contributing factor, and then he didn't come in the NFL and blow the roof off the league. So I've just kind of stuck onto my bias, perhaps. Good luck to him. I mean, you know, I don't have anything that says he's a bad guy. So, of course, wish him all the success in the world. Looking around the division, though, Peter, who in the division has made the most noise as far as creeping up to come after, you know, the division title? Because you look at the Vikings, you know, losing Stephon Diggs or shipping Stephon Diggs. They might have lost him last year, to be quite honest with you, at least mentally. The Detroit Lions, you know, Jonathan Taylor's a good addition to that offense. They're the running back room, but I don't know if it's really enough to take them, you know, all the way up to where Green Bay is sitting right now. And then the Bears are just a whole lot of mess starting from the quarterback room on down. So who are you, if you have to be scared of somebody coming up to unseat Aaron Rodgers in the pack, who is it?
I'm actually less concerned with anybody in the NFC North than I was last year if I'm the Packers, because I think that the gap in talent between the Packers and the Vikings, honestly, I think it was a negative gap last year. I think the Vikings had a more talented roster than Green Bay last year and just didn't play to it for a number of reasons, not the least of which is the flaws under center. I think that's flipped. I think the Packers are now clearly the better roster, the more balanced roster. They're better at key spots, and Minnesota got worse at key spots. I mean, they're having to replace three contributors slash starters at corner. They're having to replace a star receiver, and you know, they're going to try and do it with some rookies, and maybe that's workable, but it's probably not, at least in the short term. So I think right now Green Bay is clearly the best team in the division. I don't think that's changed. Last year you could say, oh, well, you know, Minnesota was better, but except they lost to the Packers twice. So, I mean, I think the gap has widened, if anything, between Green Bay and the rest of the division. The problem was Green Bay didn't do anything to catch the 49ers and probably didn't do anything to catch the Saints. And, you know, if you don't have to play both of them, that's ideal, because then you really only have to win in a one game situation. But the Eagles are better. The Cowboys are better. To me, the biggest questions are not with the NFC North, but the rest of the NFC, because Green Bay didn't do as much as some of those other teams to get better.
Yeah, I completely see where you're coming from. And I mean, when I look at the NFC North, I think it's Green Bay, and then everybody else is fighting for second place and a hopeful wild card spot if they can get one. Final question for me on this episode, Peter. When you look at the Buccaneers, what stands out to you? And obviously Tom Brady, you know, Rob Gronkowski, but when, and we don't know at the time of this recording when they're going to play, but when the Bucs and the Pack meet up, what makes you think that the Buccaneers might hand the Packers a loss if they do?
I think it's the ability to create chunk plays. I mean, I think any time you face an offense that can win down the field when you have Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, you know, whether or not Rob Gronkowski is going to play in this game, I think is already a question, just because the guy can't stay healthy lately and did not play football last year. So, you know, you're talking about a pretty serious question mark for the Packers in that regard. Is can they create opportunities to make the Buccaneers go 12 plays, 10 plays, and go 80 yards? That is the problem that they faced last year. They were giving up too many chunk plays. And that's something that has to stop against an offense that can create them down the field. Now, if they can create pressure – That's the equalizer. And that's the difference is Za'Darius Smith, Preston Smith, Kenny Clark, those guys, especially up the middle, can get after Tom Brady and not let him sit back there to get the ball down the field. So I'm pumped to see these two teams play. I'm glad we get one more Rodgers-Brady matchup. Could be the last one we see, and maybe even get one in the playoffs. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, it's going to be a fun season no matter what, especially if they can get it off the ground on time and don't have to cut any games off the schedule or anything. Tom Brady with the Buccaneers is slated to face Drew Brees twice. Aaron Rodgers, like you said, Pat Mahomes is on the slate. I mean, it's a great schedule of quarterbacks to go against in 2020. So hopefully we can get this off the ground. Peter, thank you for all your insight. I'm happy to hear that at least one person who is close to the Packers does not think the team is going to be picking number one overall in next year's draft because they didn't get a wide receiver in this year's draft. It makes me feel better about my stance on the fact that they didn't draft any wide receivers. So I greatly appreciate your insight, and I'm sure that our listeners do as well.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it. Good to be on with you.
All right, guys, that again was Peter Bukowski of the Locked On Green Bay Packers podcast. And guys, full disclosure, Peter and I actually had to record that episode a little bit early on because at the time, he and his wife were expecting the birth of their first child. And in fact, Peter and his wife did welcome their new son into the world on May 8th, just in time to celebrate Mother's Day. So Peter, if you hear this, I've already sent you a tweet, brother, but I want to congratulate you on the show here. Congratulate you, your wife, your son, your family. Welcome to the world, to your young one. Enjoy the ride, brother. It's a roller coaster. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. And for the rest of you guys out there listening to the show, again, we appreciate it. Whether you're a Packers fan, a Buccaneers fan, or you just enjoy NFL talk altogether, we appreciate your continued support and listenership and allowing us into your lives, your homes, your office space, your car, wherever you're listening to this episode of the Locked On Bucks podcast. And we hope that you continue to do so by subscribing on whatever channel you're listening on, whatever podcast platform you are listening on. James will be back tomorrow. It is my day off and one of my children's birthdays, so I will be celebrating that. But he will be here to complete our NFC North crossover week with the host of the Locked On Detroit Lions podcast. So I hope you come back to check that out again. This podcast, this episode has been brought to you by Built Bar. Head over to BuiltBar.com and use promo code Locked On for $10 off of your first box. You guys already know, I highly recommend it. Until we speak again, please continue to be safe, be healthy, as James likes to say, wash your hands. And thank you so much for joining me right here at Locked On Bucks.